All right. Well, let me jump on over here to the Right Side Way monologue. And I gotta tell you, it kind of in relation to that missing dissing thing that I talked about a moment ago in the number three triple dipper. In one of those, like, too weird to be true, but yet it is moments, Kamala Harris just dissed on Christians everywhere. I mean, first she chose not to attend the Albert Smith Memorial Charity Dinner put on by the Catholic Archdiocese of New York City. Okay, it was an event. She skipped it. I guess you can write it off for, like, I'm busy that night, or I have to do my hair, or something. Whatever. Either way, she missed a major event. But then came the moment in one of her recent rallies that went way beyond missing an event. You may have seen the video. A young man yelled out, "Jesus is Lord," and got that kind of smarmy, "I'm about to school you" look from Kamala Harris. She looked at him and literally said, "Oh, I think you came to the wrong rally." And while the audience laughed and jeered, she felt empowered by her ill-timed, misguided, secular sense of humor. And she said, "I think you meant to go to the smaller rally down the street." And the audience howled and guffawed and mocked the kid who had said, "Jesus is Lord." And meanwhile, she just looked so proud. And then afterwards, reality set in as it began to get reported nationwide. She had so glibly mocked a young man for shouting "Jesus is Lord" and implied that that message was better suited to the Trump Vance rally across town. In one fell swoop, Kamala Harris told Christian voters their faith-based political views were not welcome in her camp. They were better suited to the other camp. Christians everywhere need to take note. Look, some years ago while I was in the state Senate, a bill came up that dealt with pro-life issues. I don't remember which one in particular because there were several pro-life bills that I carried or co-sponsored. But I do remember the opposition. And there was one lady in particular who was always involved in the opposition to anything pro-life. And she was absolutely spiteful. I mean, she was just really obnoxious. I mean, vitriol against pro-life measures, I get it. Sometimes people are animated about that. But she always came across as having these mean-spirited personal attacks. She was an absolutely bitter person, and it showed. And on one occasion, in the middle of all this, I was accused of doing the most heinous of things, the most unforgivable. I was accused of letting my faith mix with my politics. "Say it ain't so, Phil. You didn't really act like a Christian in the political realm, did you?" Well, I hope I did. I mean, when I got elected to represent Senate District 10 in Alabama, I was not elected to be less than who I am. I ran as a conservative, I ran as a patriot, and I ran as an unabashed believer in Jesus Christ. Why would I leave that at home? If my faith is what I say it is, the most important thing to me, and it makes me who I am and what I am, then how can I possibly not take it with me into politics? Of course I took it with me into politics. I'd be a hypocrite if I didn't. But see, here's the deal. The truth is, we had better mix our faith with our politics. We had better pray about our vote. We had better mix our faith-based values and traditions and principles with our politics, because if we don't take those positions of faith into the public square, then someone else is going to take just the opposite to the public square for us. If there's a vacuum, it will always be filled. Wouldn't you rather it be filled with people who are like-minded and like-spirited in your faith? I recently attended the Alabama Policy Institute's annual dinner. Dr. Ben Carson was a speaker, did a wonderful job. At one point, he said something that I thought was profound, so I actually made a note in my phone so I wouldn't forget it. Speaking about faith, Carson said this. He said, "It is said that there are two things we should never talk about in public, politics and religion. But those are the two things," he said, "that we must talk about because those are where we're being attacked." And he's so right. And I'll take it one step further. Not only should we talk about those two things, politics and religion, but I believe that we absolutely 100% unequivocally should talk about them together. You see, Christians need to care about who's elected to make and enforce the laws that govern our country. Christians need to not only care about who's elected, but Christians need to also vote their faith and run for office themselves and seek the opportunity to carry their faith into the public square. I mean, it's really simple. Either we as Christians speak out about our faith, or those who don't believe will speak out about our faith. I'd rather it be us than them. So a recent study came out, though. Pollster George Barna did a survey, and he determined that inexplicably, 104 million Americans will not be voting in this coming election. But most notably to me is that among those expected 104 million non-voters, 32 million of them are self-identified Christians who are expected to sit this election out. For one reason or another, they just won't likely make it to the polls. Some of those are going to be reasonable excuses like health or travel or job conflicts, but the bulk of those non-voting Christians, they're just sitting out. The most common reason for the non-voting Christians given in the poll, fully 68% of them said a lack of interest in politics and elections. Y'all, that's almost 22 million Christians who say it's just not their bag, just doesn't get their attention, they're just not into it. Wow. Well, Dr. Jeff Myers is an author, a speaker, and a president of Summit Ministries. He recently talked about this. He said, basically, if you don't know the candidates, if you don't know all the issues, and at the very least consider what he called constitutional principles like life, liberty, and property. Because, he said, those are three things the Constitution said is developed in order to provide. He went on then to say, too, this is a great quote. He said, how do I support life with my vote? How about liberty? Things like religious liberty and free speech. What about property? Who's going to be the most likely to think that people ought to have their own property and own businesses? Because there's a lot of worldviews out there, he pointed out. And he said, let's be honest. There's a lot of worldviews who say the abolition of private property would be a preferable state. Wow. So which candidate for any given office is going to be most likely to lessen the evils that occur around life, liberty, and property? That's going to be how you inform your decision. What he basically said was, life, liberty, and property, those are things the Bible talks about. And so you should examine your vote. And by the way, you notice I have yet to say Republican or Democrat. All I'm telling you right now is you need to vote. You need to have an informed decision. And if you don't know the issues, if you don't know the people, if you don't know the candidates, you can at least look at it from life, liberty, and property because the Bible does talk about those. I believe that Myers is right. I'll take it one step forward from that. We're also called to be good stewards. I mean, we can look at the parable of the talents, right? Jesus told the story in Matthew 25 about the ruler who left on a trip and he gave three servants some money. Two of them took care of what they'd been given. They invested it, they worked it, they grew the ruler's resources. But one of them just sat on it. He buried it. Then he tried to say later it's because he didn't want to take a risk. So he just sat on it, did nothing. And in the end of the parable, he was the one who was seen as not being worthy. The implications of that parable are many, but one of the outcomes is the issue of stewardship. You see, good stewardship of that which we've been entrusted is not only sought, it is expected. What will we do with this country we've been given? Will we as Christians take bold action and grow it and shepherd it and be good stewards of it? Or will we sit on our haunches and just wait and see what happens? I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be the one in the end who realizes that I had an opportunity to do something to advance this great nation in a way that increases our capabilities, enhances our strength, protects life, limb, and property, or liberty and property. But instead, I just did nothing? Listen, let me conclude with this. Our faith is not based on works. I believe that. I believe that my salvation is assured because I have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. No other way. But there's two parts to being a Christian. There's making Him Savior, and there's making Him Lord of our lives. My salvation is assured, yours would be too, if I did nothing else but believe that I would go to heaven by accepting Christ. But y'all, if I did nothing else, what would other people see? What good would I do while I'm here on this earth? What difference would it make? Sometimes Christians need to be busy being Christians. Not in a braggadocious, ostentatious way, but in a real and practical way. In James 2:18, we're told that faith and works go together. Because that's the visual reminder to the world that we believe. It says actually, but someone may say, you have faith and I have works. I say, show me your faith without the works and I'll show you my faith by my works. So Christians, let me wrap up by saying, listen to me. Faith and politics, they go together like a hand in a glove. If you sit this one out, you're wrong. Get up, get busy, get to the polls and vote your faith. Vote like your faith depends on it. Because maybe it actually does. Faith and politics, they go well together. And that's a wrap for The Right Side Way.